Hey, everybody. It is Monday, September 9th. This is the NYISO Open Teleconference for September. My name is Nettie Lagasse. I'm the Associate Executive Director here at NYISO, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest today Kate Dolan. And Kate and I will be chatting about ISO 3166. This is a standard on country codes. Kate, I can say a little bit about you from your biography, or you can introduce yourself. I don't know what you prefer.
I can do either way. I'll introduce myself because
okay,
I'll do my
great.
Disclaimer.
Excellent. Sounds good.
My background is I am a real librarian. I have an MLS from University of Maryland, and I have worked in and around libraries on and off for decades, but for the last 20 or so years, I've worked more in either systems in libraries or in IT doing information stuff. So to me, that's a merger of library science and information technology. And over the course of doing all of this, I got involved in ISO 3166. I had been interested for a long time in country codes, because it does affect what we do and how we do it. And I've worked for the federal government for a number of years and for other governments, both as a consultant and as a government employee for a long time. We won't go into how long. But, you know, country codes makes a difference. And it makes a difference in how you send things and what you do. But let me start out by saying I do still work for the U.S. government. However, there is no support for the work I do on country codes right now from my current agency, which is the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. So I do ISO 3166 activities as a private citizen on behalf of the country, the United States of America, as opposed to on behalf of the United States government. And I would say in this day and age, there's a bit of a difference there, that more perhaps than there used to be. Because I originally started out doing 3166 work when I worked for the U.S. Department of Defense, where, as you can imagine, country codes is really important. And so in DOD, there was a lot of concern about being able to ship stuff, to be able to identify information or where we were sending troops or logistics issues or information gathering. We had to be able to say what was the area. And we had to be able to respond to issues like disputed areas and that sort of thing. And so I became involved with 3166 and then became the United States representative to it close to 15 years ago, when my predecessor, who was from Caterpillar Tractor, retired. So I became the U.S. rep and have done it. I was the U.S. rep, and then I became chair of the maintenance agency. And there's actually two parts to 3166. There's the maintenance agency, which is what most people think of when they think of 3166, or the product of the maintenance agency, which is the list of country codes. So if you send, you know, like I just sent a package to somebody on the committee with me who's in hospital in England, and I used the postal code from 3166. When we used to do reporting on changes in a country, when I worked in DOD, we would put the various codes. And so those sorts of things are your everyday uses. It also, we also, as 3166 maintenance agency, work with other organizations such as ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, and IEC, and with other international organizations such as Universal Postal Union, International Civil Aviation Organization, World Health Organization, and there's two or three other organizations. ICANN is another one, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. So we work with all of those people, and they use our codes. Most people don't even think about it. If you look at a website, that's Amazon.ca. That's Amazon in Canada. And that CA comes from 3166. And so I'm chair of the maintenance agency.
No, I'm wondering what the difference is between the maintenance agency and the working group. So,
good question, because the maintenance agency maintains the codes, and there's two-letter codes, three-letter codes, and numeric codes, and those are sort of the normative information or exactly what the standard is about. And then there's informational parts of the standard, such as the name of the country, the languages used, and some other information. So that's what the maintenance agency does, is identify those country codes and subdivision codes. So for example, in the United States, we have states. I live in Maryland, MD. So we track those. We don't assign them, but we track them and make them available. So if you wanted to see all the state and territory codes in the United States, you could look in 3166 for US and get all those states and territories. What's above that in the other group I chair now is Working Group 2. And what Working Group 2 does is we actually maintain the standard, which is not the codes themselves, but it's the document that says how you select codes, how the maintenance agency works, how decisions are made, how decisions could be appealed, and it's sort of the nuts and bolts of how the maintenance agency and country codes work. So, for example, in May, we were in Ottawa, and we had an ongoing discussion with one of the members of our technical committee who wanted a country code for one of their entities, we'll call it, and the maintenance agency turned this down. They wanted an actual country code, which would enable them to get a code from ICANN for internet. So if you wanted to do, say, banking, or if you wanted to have some sort of gambling website and you wanted to have it separately identified from an existing country, you could ask for a country code, and people do. We discuss those and decide whether they meet what we consider the criteria to be a country and deserving of a country code. In this particular case, we chose not to give them a country code because they already had a code that was under their sort of the country who handles most of their activities, such as diplomatic activities and mail and that sort of thing. But they were very insistent that they wanted a country code for a variety of reasons, mostly having to do with commerce. So they came to the maintenance agency. We turned them down twice. They appealed to the working group. The working group turned them down, and now they appeal to the technical committee. But those appeal processes are within the standard. So the standard says there will be a maintenance agency, there will be a working group, there will be, this is how you ask for stuff. This is how decisions are made. This is what, you know, standards are generally done as a consensus activity. This is what the standard will say. What is a consensus? Is it everybody? Is it everybody but one? Is it no opposition? You know, you might have seven people vote out of 12, and, you know, if seven people vote out of 12, but the other five don't say anything, is that a consensus? And that's what the standard itself says. And it also will describe how you put out the standard. So the standard used to be in three parts. It was the country codes, the subdivisions, and formerly used codes. And now it's in a database. So now the new standard will describe the database and talk about how that's done. So that's sort of what the different things are.
That's all very interesting. So actually that leads me to one of the questions that we had for you was, if someone wants to get access to the 3166 standard, or I think you are the 3166 database, how can one get access? That is actually a question we get fairly frequently here at NYSO.
Yes, I'm sure you do, because I get them too. I even get them from other parts of the world, which is sort of funny.
No, right now we get them from mostly Americans. I think ANSI forwards them to us.
Yes. And the way to get access to that is you can get to the database. It's called the OBP Online Business Process, and it's through NYSO. And one of the things we did is Working Group 2 and the maintenance agency together asked NYSO to make the
database. ISO.
ISO. Sorry. ISO itself, ISO.org, to put the 3166 data on the internet so you can ask for a country code for a specific country. Now, you can get a listing of all of the country codes, but if you want subdivision codes as well, that you usually have to buy unless you're willing to go one by one. So you can get all the subdivision codes, say, for the United States. So you'd get all the states and territories. You can get that online for free, no problem. If you want the entire database, you can get it. You can subscribe to it and get it updated. I think it's 3 times a year right now, and they'll send it to you. So we have really worked to make that available. Also, a little known fact is oftentimes you can get a fairly current version of 3166 from IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, because they incorporate 3166 into their IETF RFCs, Request for Change. So if you want to try that, that's another way. Wikipedia also is often a good source. I am not recommending those because, of course, ISO is the definitive version.
Right, right. No, that's great because I think a lot of the requests that we've gotten over the years were from people or companies who are trying to build it into their systems. And I think that what you described sounds like it would be really helpful for them. So
yes, and if they want the whole list and all the subdivisions, I don't know what the price is, but I don't think it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, maybe $100 or $200. It's not like thousands. So.
Well, at least hopefully what's available would allow them to, you know, test their systems or get their system going before they decide if they need something more expensive for them.
Exactly. And a lot of places, I mean, really are there very many countries who need, you know, the Sahara region of Morocco in their database?
I don't know. Some of those. I think a lot of the questions were, you know, people who just needed to look at it to figure out what they were going to do with it. So that sounds great. So moving on. So so there is a revision process under. I think you described this a little bit. A revision process underway regarding 3166. What does that process include?
That is very true. We are in the process of revising the standards.
So it's the maintenance agency, it's the working group who's doing that, or the maintenance agency who's doing that? And these are all the same people anyway, right?
No, they're actually not.
Okay.
And that's an interesting point because, first of all, we are revising the standard itself, 3166. And one of the things that has changed and will now be incorporated into this standard change is we're changing a little bit of the membership in the maintenance agency. The maintenance agency used to be 10 entities, 5 organizations, and 5 country standards organizations. So NISO represented the United States. And we had Sweden and France and England and United States, and who was the fifth one? Sweden.
China? Okay.
No, and that's where it's become interesting is there was a complaint made, and it was deemed to be a reasonable suggestion that there needed to be representatives at 3166 from Asia and Africa and Latin America. So the committee, the maintenance agency, was extended, and there are now people who serve as representatives. So we have a Japanese gentleman. We have a Korean gentleman. We have somebody from Africa who's never come, to the best of my knowledge. So we are extending it to make it more available to get input from different parts of the world. And it used to be that the 5 countries were permanent.
Ah, yes.
And now they're not.
Oh.
And this actually is interesting because it goes back to the end of World War II. And these 5 countries were basically the people who won World War II.
Yep.
Because a lot of the country codes came out of the need during World War II to identify stuff, you know, places, countries. So, and that's why you find some very odd things in 3166, like my favorite, Midway Island.
Okay.
You know, Midway Island.
Well, it was important then.
Well, it was, and it's still important. My sister was just here this weekend, and she was the third child in history ever born on Midway Island.
Oh, great, great.
So it means a lot to my family, but probably not many other people. And it's now uninhabited or only inhabited part of the year, whereas if my parents were there and my sister was born, my dad was in the military, and there are about 60 people living fairly somewhat permanently on the island. So, but yeah, it has some other things like Akrotiri, which was a base in the Mediterranean, and that was an issue for, you know, the end of World War II and the Cold War and things like that. So there's a lot of historic stuff. But one of the things we've been doing as the maintenance agency is trying to move away from that and go into using what's currently applicable for things like the internet and aviation and things like that sort of stuff, more in common usage today.
Okay. So one of our questions was, what are some of the issues the U.S. Technical Advisory Group should be concerned about in the revision? It sounds like things are getting updated, but are there issues, or it's mainly just working out these additional points of input?
Well, in the update to the standard itself, the U.S. probably doesn't have any significant concerns because we've addressed those. We've had a lot of input, and it's reflective of U.S. concerns to a large extent.
Okay. All right.
Within the maintenance agency, there's a couple issues that are, of course, political.
Yep.
For example, one that comes up from time to time is, what do you do about Palestine?
Mm-hmm.
And Palestine is a very, very sensitive issue for a lot of reasons. And periodically, I'd say once every 2 or 3 years, we get letters from people who say, I got one from a guy in Israel who said, you know, if you go back to the Bible, Israel owns all of this land, and we do not think you should give a code to the Palestinians. And I'm like, well, you know, that's not how we make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And you get things like that. We get letters from China saying, why do you have anything for Taiwan? They're only a province of ours. And we get stuff from Kashmir and other disputed areas. So about once every 4 years, I get a letter, usually in Spanish, from Argentina about the Falkland Islands.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of funny because I went to Argentina and actually bought a pin with the Argentine flag and the Falkland Islands superimposed on it. So, because I thought it was sort of mildly amusing. But, you know, they never call it the Falklands. They call it Islas Malvinas. And, you know, I understand where they're coming from, but right now I think the British flag is still on it, and they have had a flag on it for decades and decades, and so that's sort of the reality of the situation. Another one is Crimea.
Yep. Crimea, oh yes.
Yeah, Crimea is a big one because Russia wants Crimea listed as Russian.
But it's not, so... So we mentioned earlier that one of the most commonly recognized applications in 3166 is at the top level internet domains. That's something everyone uses all the time.
Yeah.
.ca, .uk, .fr, and so on. Are there other uses of 3166 that people might not be aware of that might be underappreciated?
Yes, I would say so, but that's my perspective. And one of them is new passport. If you don't have an ISO 3166 country code encoded in your passport, it won't work.
So that whether or not your passport is encoded is entirely up to your country, the country that issues it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And what's interesting is there's a gray area about whether some of the Native Americans, First Nations, they're called in Canada, can issue passports. And actually, one group did issue passports, but they didn't have a proper encoding. And that was one of the issues with their passports. plus the fact that the U.S. did not recognize it and they had to leave through a U.S. port. But
So it's sort of like the real ID in a different sense, maybe internationally.
Yes. And you can't get on a plane now without a real passport if you're traveling internationally. You have to have an ICAO-recognized passport.
Sure. So the U.S. government has a standard of country codes. I believe it's called GENC, and maybe you can explain what that stands for. What's the connection between ISO 3166 and GENC?
Well, that's a very long discussion. But in a nutshell,
is it possible to do it in 2 minutes or less?
I can probably do it in about five. But GENC,
okay.
Geographic entities, names, and I forgot what the C stands for, something like that. The NGA folks would know exactly what it is.
Yes.
I worked on the
Senate
committee for a long time. It comes out of what used to be FIPS 10.4, which was the U.S. government standard for country codes and names. And then JENC became this database that they put together, and it sort of got overburdened, in my opinion, with a lot of other things because it got mixed with boundary information. It got mixed with dates and times. So it was Russia at this time, Czechoslovakia at this time. And 3166, one of the beauties of it is simply that it's right now, this is what it is.
Right.
And there's some historic information kept, but it's not like in whatever year USSR broke up and you had these. It just says these names are there. And you cannot reuse a code for 50 years at least. I think that's going to be permanent. But JENC is all this. They do it by quarter. They were proposing, I think I thought it passed, that you would verify the dates at every quarter of the year. So you would have Ukraine in 2017 first quarter and 2017 second quarter, blah, blah, blah. And whenever Crimea was taken over, they would list it as disputed in the whatever quarter it was. So it's a little bit different, and it's more of a gazetteer and more of the boundaries.
Okay.
3166 does not take a position on the exact boundaries.
Seems important.
Yes, it's a political determination of a country, not a physical determination of a country.
Okay, yep. But is there input, like, I'm assuming that they would inform each other as we progress through development of these things?
Well, yes, and what I did is when I still worked for the Department of Defense, which NGA is under, I was the U.S. rep, and I asked Trent Palmer, who's the chief geographer for NGA and deeply involved with JENC, to become my deputy and come to the meetings to see how 3166 worked and how it was approached. And I think he started to understand more of what 3166 was designed to do, and that there was a lot of overlap, but it wasn't the same sorts of things.
Right.
So I can remember having discussions when I first became the U.S. rep with people in DOD who said, well, just tell them to use our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know how many people travel internationally but realize that the U.S. is not always necessarily looked at as the always wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when we go and say, well, just use our stuff, sometimes it doesn't go over so well.
Interesting.
And I was the first American to be asked to be the chair of ISO 3166.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes. Yep. Who was the chair before you?
The chair before me was Gerard.
Yes, from France.
From France. And it, I believe, had been a German and several people said, well, you know, I don't know about Americans, but maybe Kate will be okay.
and how long have you been chairing it now?
6 years.
Okay. Yep. So hopefully you've been okay.
Yes, I've been asked to do it twice again. Because when I was asked to do it, the person who asked, well, I mean, the committee, the maintenance agency got together and said, we'd like you to do it. And there's of course, a vote of all the P members of TC46. And one of the ISO staff came to me and sort of quietly said, you know, if there's enough opposition because you're American, we'll have to get somebody else.
Right.
We think you'll do okay and you'll pass the vote, but we have to wait and see. But, you know, don't count your, you know, chickens before they hatch, because there may be opposition since you're American. And it was very gratifying to me that there was no opposition. Mm-hmm. I think there were 2 abstentions, if I remember the vote, and everybody else voted for me, which was really nice, of all the P members in TC46.
Oh, good, good. Is there anything else about 3166 that you think the NISO audience ought to know about or would be any way to stay in touch about what's going on with 3166?
Well, I would say if you want to know more about it, you can contact ISO or contact me, ISO being International Organization for Standardization, or me. If you have questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. Or they can go through you and you can forward them on to me.
That's right. Yep.
I do get, you know, a fair amount each year, and I try and do thoughtful responses. I would say it's widely used. It's used all over the world. Surprisingly, in other countries, they're more familiar with it. I think because more of them travel and know more international stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we are really working hard to make sure ISO serves the entire world and is trying to stay out of the political fights wherever possible.
Right, right. So I'm just going to see if anyone in the audience has any questions for Kate. Now's your opportunity. It's not required, of course, but if there's any burning question you had about 3166. Sounds like no, that's all right.
Right,
what?
Let me just throw out one thing here.
Yes, of course.
Is that, you know, don't think your question is goofy, because believe me, the goofier ones are, I get letters from prisoners who ask if they can have their own country code. So believe me, there are a lot of goofy questions, and many of them are just amusing, and feel free to ask, because it's, you know, you won't know unless you do. And the one other thing I would throw out is we have been approached, and not in a while now, to take over the names of oceans and bodies of water from the International Hydrologic Union.
Oh, and, that's interesting.
And we have chosen not to do it at this point, but they have not been able to get a final version of names of oceans and bodies of water out since 1954.
Okay.
And they said, well, you guys might be able to do this. And I said, yeah, yeah. I think it's worth thinking about. I'm not sure we want to do it, but.
Sounds like a good challenge.
Yes.
So we've come to the end of our open teleconference topic area. Usually what I do now is I'm going to shut off the recording and see if anyone has questions that they don't want to have recorded. But before I do shut off the recording, I'm going to say thank you, Kate, very, very much.
For taking the
time today to join us and talk about ISO 3166 country codes. And I hope everyone will join us for the October call, which will be running a week later, October 21st. So I'm going to shut off the recording, and I will stay on the line.
Okay. And I